Hello and welcome to this episode 73 of Brashcast. I'm Liam Pritchard and as always, Ross Alexander.
Hello!
This week we're going to be, well, talking about loads of things. Zelda's coming out tomorrow. Getting Zelda tomorrow. I think we've all seen the review scores. They've been unfreaking believable.
Like, across the board, it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
I sent you that picture, I don't know if you'd seen it before, but I sent you a picture early today with all the reviews, and there's nothing below a 9 out of 10.
No.
And the vast majority are like 100% reviews.
I love that there's immediately no form to this podcast. Like, I give it a go. I'm like, oh, we're going to talk about Zelda, and then we just talk about Zelda. I guess it's true, but the structure would suggest that I was going to list other things, but I was like, nah, fuck it, we'll just talk about Zelda.
All right, yeah.
Zelda's really good. Again, I haven't played it, you haven't, but as you said, I mean, the reviews are out. The first review that actually came through, and it's the one I always look to, actually, is Edge.
Right, yeah.
Because Edge, is, you know, as I'm sure most people know, they do not hand out 10s very, very often.
No, they absolutely
I don't know how many they've actually handed out. I mean, like, 10, 11 maybe in their history? Maybe a few more than that.
I think the last one I recall seeing was for Dark Souls 3.
Yeah, and you weren't so sure about it.
Your
message to me said they bum...
From Software games.
From Software, yeah.
Yeah, they do... Like, I mean, I have tried the Dark Souls games, and I totally get why people like them, and I have enjoyed elements of it, I just don't have the time to commit to a game like that.
Yeah, you can see why they might give a game like that 10 out of 10, because...
Because they are also pretentious weirdos.
I know what you mean. I know what you mean. Because it is quintessentially the most gamery game almost of all time.
Yeah.
You see what I mean?
There's,
it's built...
Even if the game itself isn't designed around it, it has cultivated this this fandom that is built a large part of it around elitism. There is an aspect of it where people, you know, if you're playing it on a stream or something, like, players will come in and help you because, you know, they... And this is something I like about gaming culture, is when groups of people love a game so much that they decide to try and get as many people to appreciate it as they can. Like, that is absolutely what games culture should be.
Yeah, I see what you mean.
But unfortunately, most of the culture that you see is a bit snobby, pretentious, and looks down on people who don't love Dark Souls.
Yeah, I know what you mean. That's no fault of Edge's, of course.
No,
it's
of course.
No fault of From Software. And I think one of the things that is great about it is the fact that it is willing to just throw you in at the deep end. And while sometimes I think it can be a little bit too obtuse for its own good, and maybe that's why it kind of has grown such a following, because of the fact that it's so obtuse that people have to work hard to get into its systems to make sense of the world. But I mean, that's something that's probably... I mean, when people are talking about Zelda at the moment, obviously everyone's kind of thinks of the original Zelda and the similarities in design, despite the fact that the original Zelda was released in 1986. But there's definitely a kind of Dark Souls thing about it. You know, again, this has come from someone who hasn't played it, but I keep hearing from everyone how, like, it's actually quite difficult.
That it doesn't hold your hand.
Yeah, absolutely. And obviously that's one, you know, I can only assume Nintendo have seen the popularity of games such as Dark Souls and maybe seen the backlash against games, you know, their own games, certainly to a degree.
I'll tell you what, Nintendo, with Zelda in particular, has a heritage of not holding players' hands when they get started.
They do in Zelda.
Well, no, I'm talking about the original Zelda.
Oh, yeah, the original
Zelda.
If you
went left instead of right in Zelda, you were going to have a very hard time, and the game was not going to guide you to the right.
And by the way, that's exactly what I did, because it's bizarre. As much as I'm a massive fan of Zelda, I've never actually played the original Zelda. I played pretty much every Zelda game from A Link to the Past onwards, minus the kind of, you know, CDI games.
the Philips
ones. I have actually played them since, but not properly. I had a go of them. I was like, oh yeah, they're shit. Let's not see that ever again.
Yeah.
But I got the NES Classic. or classic NES, whatever you want to call
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah.
And I started playing the original Zelda a couple of days ago, because I was like, well, the new Zelda's coming out. It's supposed to have, obviously, these links and heritage with the original game. Mm-hmm. So I was like, you know, I'm going to give it a go. And it really is exactly that. You know, you go in, you go into a cave, you get your sword, the famous, you know, it's dangerous outside, take this.
Yeah.
And then that's it. It's just a grey map in the top right corner with nothing suggesting where you're going other than you're moving left in a box. And then all of a sudden I was dead. I was like, what the fuck just happened?
Yeah.
And, it, you know, as you say, if you go the wrong way, it's very hard, very quick, that game.
Yeah.
Completely unforgiving.
I think it's because a lot of modern, especially modern gamers, they are becoming conditioned for that kind of hand-holding. Mm-hmm. And obviously that's a big factor of what makes games that don't have it so appealing.
Yeah, yeah.
You feel like you're exploring on your own terms.
Yeah, yeah. And I think one of the things that's held Nintendo, I don't want to say held back, but dictated their choices to a certain degree in the past few years, is their fear of alienating kids.
Yeah.
Because obviously Nintendo is still going primarily, you know, it's for kids primarily, and old people like me who still have very fond memories of, you know, Nintendo games.
I would say much in the same way Star Wars aims at families, Nintendo is the same.
Yeah, well, I think that is something Nintendo, you know, stuff with like the NES Classic, they must look at it now and think, all right, yeah, we want to appeal to kids and a new generation of gamers.
Mm-hmm.
But they've got this huge generation of 30-somethings who have nothing but the fondest memory of Nintendo games and want to go back to them. And not only that, it's realizing that kids are incredibly, you know, I don't want to use the word tough, but
they're fickle, at least.
Well, I think that's the problem. Everyone's so worried about kids being fickle. They're like, oh, if they don't understand the system straight away, they're just going to turn this off. Mm-hmm. Whereas I think if they're presented with a challenge, quite often they'll stick with it. And obviously that's what's happened with Dark Souls, games like Bloodborne and stuff, that mm-hmm. a community built up around it. It's like, all right, we don't need to handhold these kids anymore because kids understand the logic and the language of video games. We don't need to tell them to press A to pick up a ruby. They know how to do that.
It raises a pretty interesting question, just going back to the concept of, you know, kids sticking with a game until they can beat it. It reminds me of growing up, and I don't know what your childhood was like, but when we were growing up,
oh, sunshine and lollipops.
Oh right, okay, well,
yeah, it's pretty amazing.
Yeah,
I had a pony, it was unbelievable.
Right, okay, well, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I thought so.
But yeah, like growing up, if I was lucky, I got two new video games a year.
No, it was exactly the same thing. That was
birthday and Christmas.
Yeah,
so it was a case of if you didn't make a good choice with your game, it didn't mm-hmm. matter because
you had to stick with it.
Unless you had a neighbor who was willing to do like a long term swap with you,
mm-hmm,
there was no way that you were going to be playing anything else. So you had you that was all you had.
Yeah, so there was no trade-ins. You know, and we've mentioned before on the podcast, the difference places like, obviously with game, it, you know, trade-in has just become a normal thing for the vast majority of gamers. You know, you play a game, you finish it, you trade it in, you get something else. Secondhand games, you know, if you're willing to wait a year, we've mentioned it before, you can pick up amazing games for like £5.
Yeah, we spoke a lot, like, the concept of trading in games is kind of the genesis of this podcast and indeed our friendship.
Yeah, absolutely.
I was working at CEX in Edinburgh, mm-hmm, and you came in and you were a frequent flyer, you could say.
Yeah, well, this was back in the days when, you know, for the website this podcast is for, brashgames.co.uk. Let's learn to speak on a podcast, for heaven's sake. Obviously, whenever I got games to review, in the good old days, I get sent physical copies.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, not anymore. Everyone just sends you code. So if you end up with a shit game for review, you're just stuck with a shit game for review forever. It's just stuck there on your hard drive.
Yeah.
But of course, before, I'd get these terrible games for review, but, you know, they'd still be worth like £30 worth of trade-in. And I literally worked right behind, because I worked on Princess Street in Edinburgh, the main road,
mm-hmm,
and CEX is the road back. So I used to literally walk past CEX naturally to get to the bus stop. So it just made sense. Like, I get a new game for review, and I just take it into trade-in, because mm-hmm, I'm like, oh, you know, I couldn't be fucked selling it on eBay.
Well, it was always weird, obscure, often Japanese titles that you would get The games that are either on very limited release in the UK or sometimes I never saw any other copies of them.
Yeah.
So that explains why you got a decent price for them. Plus, if you got them early, that means you had it finished.
I got them early.
You had it finished and traded in before the price had time to drop.
Yeah, yeah. If you get them early, you know, some of those games were shit, but that's the thing. CEX don't trade in based on the quality of the game. It's usually, I mean, obviously, it may be in the long run, but when games are new and they come out, it's based purely on price. So if a shit game comes out and it's £60, £40, then it's going to be £40 in CEX, and you're going to get like a £30 trade-in, regardless of the fact that it's absolute wank.
Yeah, so it's supply and demand. At the very base of it, it's supply and demand.
Yeah, yeah. And plus, of course, it was just an excuse for me to sneak in and just kind of spy on Ross from the corner. Unrequited love and all that jazz. It's all one day, I finally had the guts to go up and speak to him. I was like, excuse me, I think we should do a podcast together.
It wasn't even that, because it was... we both had the Metal Gear collection... And we were going to play Peace Walker together, and we never did.
No, but we did do the podcast.
Yes, we did do that.
So it worked out beautifully in the end.
Yeah.
So that's fantastic.
I had mentioned that I was basically selling a bunch of my stuff for the move to Sweden. Mm-hmm. And someone had asked, oh, well, if you're getting rid of any games, let me know.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought, I don't really have any games. Like, I have...
Really?
I have a hard copy of Final Fantasy 7 and 8 and 9 and Metal Gear Solid on the PlayStation.
Okay.
And not much else. Pretty much, really? Pretty much everything else is digital now.
Oh, dude, if I was sitting... I mean, the thing is, I've kind of maxed out my collection of volumes because I don't want to take up any more space.
Mm-hmm.
But if I listed out the amount of Japanese Dreamcast and Sega Saturn games I've got sitting in front of me, so the Sega Saturn collection isn't too big, and I do randomly have Final Fantasy 8 and 9. It's bizarre, actually, because I own Final Fantasy 9, but I've never played Final Fantasy 9.
Wow.
I know.
Wow, 9 is amazing.
That's what I keep hearing. When I was younger, like, the art design of it never really captured... I don't know, there's something weird about the style of it.
That surprises me, because you are one of the biggest weeaboos I know.
I know. Well, I played, obviously, 7. The thing is, when I was younger, I was never so big into them. Bizarrely, I got more into JRPGs on the 360. It was the Sakaguchi games.
Right,
it was like
Lost Odyssey,
Blue Dragon.
Yeah.
Even I played some of the more obscure ones. Because it was
Eternal Sonata and stuff.
Yeah, I played Eternal Sonata. I played like a whole bunch of them on the 360. I've kind of gone from there. And obviously I've mentioned numerous times my love for Final Fantasy 13. Obviously the only guy in the world, but still love that game. But I haven't gone back and played, you know, I played, you know, 7, but I've played like the first, I'd say, 6 hours of Final Fantasy 7 about 10 times.
Right,
but
okay.
I've never finished it. And same with 8. I've played the opening of 8 loads of times, but I never kind of committed to it. And then 9, never. But then bizarrely, I loved Final Fantasy 6. So I have this really weird, inconsistent relationship with Final Fantasy, but considering it's a series called Final Fantasy and there are like 7,000 games, you know, it doesn't matter if you have an inconsistent relationship with it. It's an inconsistent series.
So that's true.
Somehow we're going to turn this conversation back around to Zelda.
Yes.
I don't quite know how we're going to do it at this point, but anyway, Zelda looks really good. You know, the reviews are amazing. The only problem with that is I'm getting the Nintendo Switch and Zelda delivered to work tomorrow.
Okay.
And I promised my wife, for some bizarre fucking reason, that I wouldn't open it until my birthday next Wednesday.
Yeah, this was playing on my mind, and I didn't want to straight up ask you, because it would be like I was shaming you, but you've brought it up yourself, so that's fine.
Yeah.
Do you think you'll last?
Yeah, I think that, like, I don't want to, because I really want to play Zelda.
Mm-hmm.
But if I do, that means everything else I'm playing immediately goes tits up.
That's
and I've actually
true.
Been doing pretty well at the moment in terms of sorting out the back catalogue. I mean, obviously I mentioned the fact that I'd finished Final Fantasy 15. Well, finished the story anyway, but okay. I've kind of got to draw a line under that, because otherwise I'll play it forever. I finished Resident Evil 7, which I thought was mostly good.
Okay.
No, mostly brilliant, always good. Did I mention it last week, Resident Evil 7?
We have spoken about you playing it.
Okay, well, I finished it anyway. The second half, like everyone says, the second half's not as good as the first half. The second half actually feels more Resident Evil, but because you become more empowered, it takes the edge off, whereas in the start of the game, it feels much more like, I don't know, I guess what you thought Silent Hill might have been.
Right.
It, you know, you feel completely powerless in the start of the game. It doesn't feel particularly Resident Evil at the start.
Yeah.
But you just feel like you could be killed at any moment. Well, later in the game, all of a sudden, even though you're still kind of conserving your ammo,
mm-hmm.
and it's all about inventory management and stuff, I'm still carrying around a flamethrower, a shotgun, and a semi-automatic. So I'm like, you know what, I'm going to do okay, I think.
Yeah, but that's always the turning point for a game, especially a survival horror game, when it goes less from literally surviving to actually getting your own back and being more assertive.
Yeah, well, it's still, don't get me wrong, it's still super fun. And it's fun in a different way, actually. It starts to feel like a different game. It's not as scary, not any way. In fact, it probably loses the scares once you kind of build up your repertoire of weapons, because it suddenly happens quite quickly. But it's still well worth playing. It probably doesn't help that once you leave the house, it's not quite as interesting.
Yeah, there's certainly something primal about that, I think. I felt the same way when I got the flamethrower in Alien Isolation. Where even if the alien spots you, which used to just be game over.
Yeah, yeah.
R.I.P. Bill Paxton.
It's a shame.
Yeah.
But yeah, I know what you mean, though, because that's basically it at the start of the game. I was like, if, what's his name, Daddy, or whatever they call him. I was like, if he spots me, then I'm just dead. And there are so many elements at the start of the game of Alien Isolation. Like, at the start, sorry, I should have mentioned that, it feels so much more like Alien Isolation, because you're wandering around solving puzzles, trying to get weapons, and then Daddy just suddenly shows up in the house, and he'll be walking around. But if he doesn't see you, you can get away.
Yeah.
But if you can stop him essentially for a limited time, but it takes up loads of ammo, and quite often he would just kill you to death if you got into a fight.
Yeah.
And it felt like Alien Isolation. But yeah, later in the game, suddenly that's removed. You've got a shotgun. It's not quite as scary. The levels aren't as interesting. It's still good. It still looks great, but yeah, it's front-loaded, that game.
Yeah,
but
agreed.
But yeah, I finished that. And the other game I'm trying to finish, although I'm not sure at the moment, is The Last Guardian.
Right, okay.
So I got that because it was on my list of games I have to play before Zelda and all these other games kind of take up all my time.
Yeah.
And it's, like, most of it, I mean, if you listen to last week's podcast, we were talking about terrible things and otherwise great games. And this is another example, because it looks wonderful. The art design's amazing. I love the world. Trico, Bird Dog, whatever you want to call him, is an absolute delight. As someone who owns a cat, like, if you own a cat, a dog, anything like that, you're just going to be completely enamored with him. The AI is actually, although occasionally annoying, is still brilliant. And it does feel like a living, breathing thing in the game.
Yeah, because it doesn't always do what you tell it to, right?
Yeah, but it's even like the little touches when he gets his head stuck in like doors and stuff. It's just completely charming.
It's not Winnie the Pooh, is it?
There's a hint of the Winnie the Pooh about him sometimes. It's this absolutely amazing achievement, I think, in game design. But then it's nearly all undermined by a terrible fucking camera. The camera is terrible.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I heard about that.
Not only is it quite awkward, the angle, but it's always fighting against you. Like, you can always set it yourself.
Yeah.
But a lot of the time, it tries to force you in a certain way. And because it's forcing you, but also giving you control, you are in this kind of constant battle with the camera. Not to mention the fact that it often gets stuck behind scenery. But it reminds you, when you play a game like that, you think, oh god, it's so close to being a masterpiece, but it's got this one technical issue. And it's the kind of thing that's never in a Nintendo game. You know, it's one of those things you take for granted, but...
Yeah, QA would catch that pretty quickly.
They would completely just get it right. Like, Nintendo don't release games with those kind of issues. Mm-hmm. It's like one of those things you take for granted. It's just everything works. And that's one of the things I'm really looking forward to with Zelda. Not only the fact that it's a huge open world, but the fact that unlike other open worlds, and again, I'm not going to pick on any, but you know what I'm talking about. It's going to be polished to within an inch of its life.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the things I'm really looking forward to. I'm just like, oh, I'm going to play this game and everything is just going to fucking work. And you just know it's going to, because it's a Nintendo game. And that's what happens in Nintendo games. But
I hope you're right. There's always going to be one game that breaks the mold, but hopefully it won't be this
one.
It doesn't
sound like this one based on the reviews at all. Although, thank God for the good reviews, because there is nothing else out at launch which is taking my fancy, unless the reviews for Bomberman are amazing. I'll pick up 1-2 Switch when it's cheap, because that game's going to plummet in price, because no single player, people will get bored of it quick. I'll pick that up for like £10 in like a few months.
It might not be a great game, it might be, but Nintendo games just don't drop like normal games.
I think this will, though. This isn't your traditional Nintendo game. I just think because there are going to be so many copies out there and people are going to trade them in pretty quick. I know usually, like, I wouldn't say that about Zelda or, you know, any other first-party Nintendo game, but I just think 1-2 Switch, you'll be able to pick up a copy pretty soon. I think that'll go on sale quite swift. But it's a bit of a shame, actually, because I just think it needs, just to really get me excited about the console, it just needed one other game, I think. And, you know, even something like one of the games from the Wii U's launch, which I thought was hugely underrated, was Nintendo Land. It's not a masterpiece, but I thought that was a great game. I don't get all the bad blood for that game. I thought it was fantastic.
Like, it's going to be harder to justify, like, if you're married with kids, it's much harder to justify a purchase of a Switch with Zelda, because it's like, okay, gather around family and watch me play Zelda.
Exactly, yeah.
As opposed to, you know, let's play some games together that are short and quick and we can take turns.
Yeah, well, the thing is with 1-2 Switch is, I mean, obviously it should have been packed in, but there was literally no single player game.
Yeah.
There's no way to... The difference between, say, 1-2 Switch and Nintendo Land is 1-2 Switch, it looks like you don't get better at it. There's no progression. They're just little mini games. You play with friends, you have a laugh, and then you forget about it.
Yeah.
Whereas Mario Party did have, Nintendo Land had that to an extent, but a vast majority of games, there was, you know, you could play them single player, and there was a way to get better. Like games like that Donkey Kong one, the one where you like tip the little Donkey Kong ship down, and you just kind of tilt. Oh, you never played it? I forgot what it's called. That game is incredibly addictive. And in terms of party games, I do not know how Mario Chase isn't one of the most famous party games ever. Maybe it's because nobody bought a Wii U. Every time I've had people around my house, like people who aren't gamers, I always put that game on and it fucking brings the house down. That's all anyone wants to play is Mario Chase. But, you know, that's besides the point. As I said, thank God for Zelda, because I'm going to be playing that for the next few months. But what's the next big one? Mario Kart?
And that's April, and it's a deluxe edition. It's not a new game.
Yeah, that's the other thing. The two games I'm talking about, let's be honest, are both games I can play on my Wii U.
Yeah.
But, as I said, the console looks nice, and I do have high hopes for it. You know, again, I think all this talk of there not being many games, people keep talking about there being this huge gap until Christmas. It's like, dude, there's going to be so many announcements, surely, at E3.
Yeah.
And the vibe about this console completely changes the moment they announce Pokemon. Like, it does. Like, that's going to be massive, absolutely massive for the Switch.
Yeah, it would be very unwise of them not to have a Pokemon in the works for that.
Oh, dude, they're absolutely going to have a Pokemon in the works. Yeah. But anyway, yeah, Zelda, Switch, somehow, I've got to last until Wednesday because I'm a lunatic. But as I've been banging on about games I've been playing, anything you've been playing?
Talking about going back through your backlog, you're going to do the verbal equivalent of sighing and rolling your eyes at me.
Oh, there we go. You haven't been playing fucking Skyrim.
No, but it's if anything, it's a little bit worse than that.
Okay, yeah, go for it.
So, because I'm selling my console, I won't be able to finished playing Witcher 3.
Okay.
So I saw that, I know you're not one for PC gaming outlets, but I saw GOG, or Good Old Games, that are actually, they're owned by CD Projekt Red as well.
GOG, is that what it stands for? Yeah. I keep seeing GOG, but I'm not a PC guy, and I keep reading it as Games on Gold for some odd reason.
No.
I know that's not it.
No, because you're thinking of Games with Gold, I suppose.
Yeah, yeah, of course I am. Yeah, yeah. But I know that's not it, but I just didn't know what it was, that's all.
Yeah, short for Good Old Games. Okay. It taps into a little bit about how CD Projekt Red got off the ground.
Mm-hmm.
I read a really interesting Eurogamer article a couple of years ago when The Witcher came out, and basically CD Projekt Red, piracy was so rampant in Poland that what they decided to do was go I think it was for Baldur's Gate, or you know, one of those Infinity Engine games, and basically they were like, right, I tell you what, we'll take care of translation, and we'll like make really nice boxes with artwork and manuals and stuff, and we'll sell it, and you'll get a cut. Yeah. And they did it, and it took off. So basically, they were like a vendor, but they were making, for all intents and purposes, collector's editions versions. And that's kind of how they got off the ground. So they actually have their roots in distribution. So Good Old Games is a website that they have, where before Steam kind of started branching out into older games, they made it possible for you to play old PC classics on your modern PC.
Yeah, which has always been an issue.
Things that previously you would have had to have run in like MS-DOS and stuff, and just things where you'd have to mess around with the configuration to make it work. So, to bring it all back, they also own, obviously, the Witcher franchise, and so they were selling it, the like deluxe edition, for £17.50. And I was like, alright.
Witcher 3, yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
And I was like, alright, cool, well, I'll get the game and all the DLC on the PC as well, so that's fine.
That's what you need, 7,000 hours worth of gaming.
Yeah, a game I've already finished. But I haven't
finished the Witcher 3.
Yeah, but I never finished the DLC.
Okay, yeah, that's fair enough. And that's one of those things, like, when the price comes down, it almost makes sense because it's cheaper than what the DLC would be individually.
Well,
like, I did a similar thing with Arkham Knight, whereas I'd already finished Arkham Knight, but then the deluxe edition was on sale for like £10.
Mm-hmm.
So even though I didn't need to play the main game again, I got it just for so I could play the DLC, and it was totally worth it. So,
well,
yeah,
I'll tell you what, CD Projekt Red sweetened the pot like you would not believe.
They are very good at that, though, aren't they? With all their free DLC.
Yeah.
The fact that they're paid DLC is bigger than the majority of most games. That tends to help.
Like, the DLC won one of the Game of the Year awards last year for Best RPG.
What was that, like Blood and Wine? Or
yeah, Blood and Wine. I haven't played it yet, but I'm really looking forward to it. But I've
Your PC... So, is your PC strong enough to play these games?
Yeah, it can.
There was a hint of like, it can,
but I'll have to play it on medium settings probably.
Okay. Does that still look, is that comparable to like a PS4, Xbox One?
It's probably still better.
Is it really?
Yeah.
That's the thing. When I say I'm not a PC gamer, I mean I am 100% not a PC gamer. And because my friends aren't into gaming, it's like, it's not like I've even seen them. So I have no experience of like a high-end PC, like seeing a game I know running on ultra settings. I've literally never seen it.
Well, you have. It's just always the trailers that you see at E3.
Yeah, I suppose. I guess the closest I'll come to is something like maybe the Scorpio. I assume when that comes out will be kind of maybe close to high-end PCs at the end of the year.
It's funny. It is funny because you're the biggest technophobe I know. And it is quite funny that we have a podcast about gaming, but you're terrified.
If I could play video
games
with like stones and sticks, I would totally do it.
Yeah.
I mean, every day I just want to go back to Ball in the Cup, but it just doesn't hold my attention for long enough, which is a bit of a shame. But no, PCs absolutely terrify me. I wouldn't say I'm a technophobe, I'm just PC gaming phobe. Does that make sense?
Right, okay.
Yeah, I can't be. I'm not a technophobe, I'm a faff. Nophobe.
Right.
That didn't sound right. Basically, anything where I think, all right, this is going to take up my time.
I can totally understand that because I felt the same way. I was lucky enough to get a job working in the games industry where I had to learn these things.
Yeah.
And over time, you know, just things like changing the config file on a PC game to make it run. That was something previously that I'd be like, I have no idea. I'll need to get someone else to come in and show me. But
I get annoyed with updates on my console games. I just want it to be a fucking Nintendo game where I put a game in and it goddamn works. Like that's my idea of gaming, my old fashioned view of gaming, where I'm just like, I want to put the game on, I want to turn it on, and it happens.
I totally get that. But
yeah,
console gaming is moving further away from being easy to use.
No, I know, and I'm not happy with it. So the idea of going towards PC, maybe one day they'll just meet in the middle, I'll be like, oh, fuck it, I'll just get a PC. But for the time being, at least, I'm still fighting the urge. and plus, you know, you've seen my house. How many fucking consoles I've got.
Oh, yeah.
If I told Bethan I was buying a high-end PC as well, she'd lose her mind. To be honest, if I was going to make that big, you know, £1,000, whatever it costs, purchase...
I'd try doubling it, but yeah, go on.
Okay, if I was going to spend $2,000 on anything, it would be on an arcade machine.
Right.
I would just love it.
Going backwards.
Yeah, to be honest, it's just because I can't take up any more room. We always say that
if you buy... an arcade machine? Are you kidding me?
What's that?
But an arcade machine takes up a lot of room.
No, that's what I mean. That's the reason I haven't got one.
Right, okay.
I mean, believe me, if I thought I could get away with it, if I thought I could sneak into the house without my wife noticing, I think I just would have bought one. I just would have bought one like a dick. And I don't, like, have a specific... I just want one of those, like, nice custom-built ones with, like, 1,000 games on it.
Just, Liam, why is everything from the broom cupboard, like, just out in the hallway? Yeah, no reason. Well, yeah. Let's put it back. No, don't go in there. What?
Why can't I go in the bedroom? Just don't go in the fucking bedroom!
and you turn the lights off, and you see is blue and red flashing lights under the door.
I can't do that. I mean, I've got, what is it, my 20th console coming tomorrow.
Fuck.
So, I mean, I literally just bought a Neo Geo Gold X, whatever it's called. Yeah. So
you're like the opposite of me. In that I want everything to be digital so I don't have to physically carry it. And you're like, no, I want things. I want the stuff so I can look at it.
When I say, with the consoles, I agree with you. I'm happy for the vast majority of my games to be digital.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a collector, but I'm a collector in the lazy sense. I don't have that completionist thing. Uh-huh. Like, you know, like some people, like they're like, oh, I'm going to get like every fucking Wii game or something like that. Generally speaking, all the games I have are just the ones I like. It's like if I really like a game, I'm like, oh, you know, it'll be nice to have a physical copy. But even then, it's not like I'm like, oh, I'm going to get all the games I love. Mm-hmm. I just kind of pick them up every so often. I keep them because I'm like, I like those. But I have a limited amount of space. I'm like, all right, I'm going to keep that. So this is the point. If I want to get something new, I have to throw something out. With the consoles, it's not like I've even got them all plugged in. I just think they look nice. Basically, we've got like a shelving unit. And instead of like... books or shit like that. I've just got like a whole bunch of consoles.
You got a nice yellow SNES.
No, my NES is very clean. Well, that's the thing. That's when you've got to fork out extra because when you're buying these consoles online, because obviously I wanted a Super NES and NES and a Master System, and obviously I'm referring to the NES and the SNES in particular here, you've got to pay that extra dollar, man, to get ones which aren't yellowed. And you've really got to put in some research. Because if you just go online and you just buy a NES or a Super NES, chances are it's going to be yellow or it's going to have yellowing. And the whole point, if I'm going to put these on shelves, is that they're almost like, you know, they're just there for the visuals almost.
Yeah.
Like, they can't be yellow. So, of course, I had to fork out, you know, that it's like an extra 30, 40 quid essentially per console. But I'm like, if I'm going to put it up on a unit, it's got to look nice. It's got to look new. So, and I think it was worth the money in the end. Because, you know, what's the point? If I'm going to do it, either don't do it or do it properly, I suppose.
If they make you happy, then, and your wife is okay with it.
Yeah, she's okay with it. I'm just, you know, well, the thing is, I say I'm not a completionist, but I do have a collection of consoles. But again, they're all consoles that I played growing up.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, I don't have, you know, the Jaguar, for instance, because I
because
never
no
a Jaguar.
One does? What?
Yeah. Well, when I look at it, it's like I've got the NES Master System, Super NES, Mega Drive, N64, Saturn, GameCube, Dreamcast, and then I've got, what is it, the Neo Geo, the Xbox, 360, PS2, PS1, PS4, PS3, Wii U, Xbox One, and the NES Classic. I'm not sure if the NES Classic counts, but again, they're all consoles I grew up with, so I'm kind of like, you know, it's kind of in the same way that I own the original Optimus Prime, because I'm like, oh yeah, precious memories. Maybe I'm just living in the past.
How is Peter Weller? No, it's not Peter Weller.
Peter Cullen.
Peter Cullen, that's it.
Autobots transform and roll out.
Yeah. Sorry, I was thinking of voices. Something vaguely robotic from the 80s. And yes, I came up with Robocop instead.
Peter Cullen, is that...
No, Peter Weller was...
When you said Peter Weller, I thought of the singer. But yeah.
That's Paul Weller.
Paul Weller, yeah, we're mixing up our Wellers, our Cullens. This is a fucking mess. Yeah, I don't know where the hell we're going with all this.
Well, you asked what I was playing, and it turned into a long rant about
how
PC gaming.
How the fuck does this always happen?
Well, I was trying to tell you about how good the deal I got with my copy of Witcher. Yeah.
What games did you get with that deal in the end? So, did you get anything else, or was it just The Witcher?
So it was Witcher 3 plus the DLCs.
Yeah.
For £17.50.
Now that was a fucking smooth transition back to the original conversation, yeah, if ever there was one.
But what Jesus you get Christ. With it, yeah, is like the complete digital art book,
mm-hmm,
the soundtracks in a couple of different formats, a bunch of wallpapers, like artwork, mm-hmm, even some avatars for forums and stuff like that.
See, don't you think with that though that the whole point of it being a special edition is that you have something tangible?
Not necessarily.
Like if I had a soundtrack, I'd kind of want the. I don't know why. As I'm saying that, I'm questioning myself. It's like, do I need all this cluttery crap? That's why I don't buy personally special editions actually for my talk, because they take up so much room.
Yeah.
But it is nice though, and as you say, when you know a company who have obviously built up a reputation now and a lot of goodwill, mm-hmm, just by not cheaping out essentially.
Yeah.
By going
yeah,
that extra mile. And yeah, obviously, you know, it helps the fact that the games are fantastic, but you know, I think it pays off in the long run in terms of like brand loyalty. You know,
yeah, no, I would agree. It made me like, because previously I've been listening to the Witcher 3 soundtrack on YouTube. Mm-hmm. It's nice to have on while I'm studying or working or whatever.
Yeah.
So it's quite nice to be able to feel like I have financially supported them.
No, that is always nice as well, and it's something I feel like I should do more often. Like, obviously, for years, as you mentioned, the CES thing, like, trading in games, and I do try and buy more games new now, but I should also listen to more video game music. It's like, I love video game music, but I hardly ever listen to it. It's bizarre.
I've got a playlist. I'll send it to you.
Oh, thanks, dude. No, I really should. You know, especially being such a big fan of, you know, stuff like Zelda, which has a famously fantastic soundtrack.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we had spoken... we had even kind of done a provisional version, or we were going to do a provisional version of a podcast idea that I've been working on.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's all about game music. I'm still trying to figure that out, but that's
like
a little while away.
Radio show.
Yeah, exactly, kind of exactly. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, we'll have to try and get that sorted. But yeah, to bring it briefly back to The Witcher, I don't know why more companies don't do that. You think about how much companies like EA, Activision spend on advertising,
mm-hmm,
absolute fortunes, and you just think, if you are willing to go that extra mile in terms of delivering free content to gamers, like, the press takes care of itself.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if it's good news travels, well, you know, I know bad news travels fast as well, but if you're giving away good stuff, that gets out there on the internet really quickly.
Yeah.
And it builds up the kind of goodwill that advertising simply can't achieve, you know? So I don't see why they don't try that more than just spending millions on advertising.
I think at the root of it, it's because CD Projekt Red has maintained control over every part of what they do. I mean, they're technically an independent studio, mm-hmm, who are making some of the best RPGs that have ever been made.
Yeah.
You know, I'm really looking forward to Cyberpunk. What, in Witcher 3?
Yeah, I couldn't get into the
combat.
It's
fantastic. It's incredibly deep and difficult to master.
No, it is deep, but it doesn't have... it didn't feel like it had any weight. Like, it never felt... Ugh, I don't want to use the word crunchy. That's a horrible fucking word. But
yeah.
It didn't... The impact wasn't there.
I can kind of see what you mean.
Don't get me wrong, it was brilliantly designed.
Yeah.
But and it's the same in movies. You've got to have that impact, and you know, to bring it back to a movie example, with something like John Wick, or a great example actually is the Taken series. The first Taken film obviously had this great choreography, but one of the things that made that film so exciting was the fact that the punches felt brutal. Every fight scene felt really, you know, like you were there.
Yeah.
Whereas the second film, it was like the choreography was similar, but all the weight had been taken out the punches.
Right.
I wasn't sure if it was the sound design or what, but immediately I was distanced from the action in a way that I wasn't with the first film. And right, that can happen with video games as well. It's like, yeah, it's got all these great systems and it looks really slick, but there was just no weight to any of it, and I just never really got into it.
Yeah, I know where you're coming at. I know a few people who express the same sentiment about like Skyrim's combat as well, and I can totally get that.
I hate Skyrim's combat. No, I hate is harsh. It's just so run of the mill.
Yeah.
It's so run of the mill.
again, it seems every week I have to bash Skyrim. I don't know what the fuck's going on. God, I still wanted to love that game. So,
what have you been playing? I've been playing a little bit of The Witcher again.
Yeah. Well, fair enough. The thing is, I mean, you're going back to older games. I'm just struggling with the fact, again, like, I don't know what to play next. I've seen the initial... I mean, speaking of Zelda scores, I mean, I've been banging on about Nier Automata for weeks now, it feels, because, obviously, Platinum were involved, and the fact that the demo came out, and it was absolutely stunning. And I've only seen four reviews, and all of them are, again, in the 9s and 10s. And I'm like, fuck! And it's, but, you know, from what I hear, it's a perfect coming together of the, you know, obscure nature of the originals, JRPG... JRPG mechanics combined with kind of high-end Platinum mechanics.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, that sounds fucking perfect. It played perfectly, and by the sounds of the initial reviews, it's that perfect coming together of the two styles. So I've got to play that game. And as I've said before, I've got to get around to Neo and all these other games. And I'm at the point now where I almost want one of these big high-profile games to not be very good.
Oh, right, okay.
No, just to not be good, just to give me a fucking break. Like, I was... Horizon Zero Dawn, as good as it looked, there was still a big question mark over that in my mind. I was like, that might... Because, you know, Killzone games are good, but the stories aren't great.
Yeah.
You know, I am a fan of the Killzone games, but there was nothing to suggest that Horizon Zero Dawn was necessarily going to be fantastic. I was like, oh, it'll almost certainly be good, but if it's good, I'll almost be okay kind of giving it a miss for at least a while.
I get that. I think ever since No Man's Sky, I've been a little bit dubious about how hard Sony pushes a studio.
Especially
with the fact that Guerrilla recently had massive layoffs.
Yeah, totally. And, you know, the games are... I mean, mechanically, they're always sound, but, you know, Killzone 3 wasn't amazing. Killzone... What was the launch game on PS4? That was, like, okay, you know? I played it, I finished it, and I was like, yeah, it was fine. And I thought, well, if kind of Horizon Zero Dawn comes out as... It was never going to be bad, but I was like, if it comes out and it's like, it's okay, it's decent... I'm like, okay, I can give it a miss. Of course, it comes out, and it's fucking 9s and 10s again.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, it's another massive game where I'm like, fuck, I've got to play that game. And now, I'm like, all right, where am I going to find the time? Because Zelda's out, that's going to be forever. I've got Nier to play, another huge game. Horizon Zero Dawn, suddenly I'm like, fuck, I want to play that as well. I don't know where the time's going to come from. And at the moment, I mean, we mentioned this before, and you look at the games, you know, the games which might be released in the coming year, and, you know, the kind of push that the Switch is going to make at Christmas, obviously Mario Odyssey, and you think Microsoft have surely got a few big games, because they've been quiet for a while, and with the Scorpio coming out, you think they're going to have a big few games to launch with that, aren't they?
Yeah.
All of a sudden, I'm looking at 2017, and like, this year could be pretty goddamn special.
Yeah.
Because it has got off to an absolute fucking stormer. And if it keeps running like this, I mean, this could be one of the best years ever. I mean, I'm not going to make that jump yet. We're still early in the year, but it could not have got off to a much better start.
Yeah, no, I would agree. For me personally, and don't worry, this isn't intended to provoke a response, but... Bethesda have hinted very heavily that they have been taking on extra projects in recent years.
Oh, fucking Bethesda. No, I've got... It's fine. That's cool.
And
Bethesda,
and if Fallout 4 is anything to go by, an announcement at E3 means a game out that Christmas.
When are they due Skyrim? Like, based on their kind of... Is it once every kind of 3 years? Is it kind of like Fallout 3 years, Skyrim 3 years... Fallout, is that how it works?
Well, Fallout 3 was 2008, and then Skyrim was 2011.
Yeah.
And then Fallout 4 was 2015.
Ah, so like three or four years.
Yeah. But, you know, they might have staffed up.
Maybe they've been working simultaneously.
They've been taking in a lot of talent, Bethesda and ZeniMax, as a kind of, and as an entity. They took on id. And, you know, like, they make some of the best first... they made Doom, which is, in my opinion, the best... Probably the best action first-person shooter of the last 5 years or so, I would say.
It's definitely in that conversation. I think both of us... Did we both put a Game of the
Year last year? Yeah, it was our Game of the Year last year.
It was our Game of the Year, and rightly so. And that was without even taking into consideration... Considering multiplayer, I never played the multiplayer. I was just playing the single player, and it was just such a perfectly designed game. And I mean, we've mentioned it before, I had no interest going into that game. I remember I saw the trailer, I was like, ah, it's not going to be for me. It's like, it'll be cool for 5 minutes with the violence, but it'll get boring. I was so fucking wrong, and I was so happy to be wrong, because that game is amazing. And they've got it is Bethesda publishing Prey, aren't they?
Yeah, well, it's Arkane that are making it, and then Prey, Bethesda that'll publish it.
Yeah. That looks more and more interesting. That's another game I've really had no interest in.
You're coming around on that one.
Well, just I keep hearing so much buzz about it. I got to be honest, I'm not excited about it. I'm at the point now where I'm just intrigued to see where it goes, because you know, you hear these things that you can turn into anything, and they do, you know, they do tend to make good games. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not something I'm just going to dismiss out of hand. I'm still, like I said, I'm definitely not excited about it, but I've been pushed from disinterested towards intrigued, so we're getting
it. It looks like hard sci-fi to me. It looks like not Asimov. Arthur. Kind of stuff. It looks like kind of Arthur C. Clarke, kind of creepy in space, but with real human problems, kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
So well, I'm very curious.
I'm always concerned about like the mechanics in those kind of games and where they go with them, because it's stuff like Deus Ex, for instance, where on the surface I should love those games. But for some odd reason, I just can't get into them. They just don't click for me. And I'm worried it might go down that route. I feel like there's some kind of weird like balancing act with these games. And don't get me wrong, I'm not saying Deus Ex is bad. Mm-hmm. Like, it's clearly a very good game. Like, you're a pretty big fan, aren't you?
I am, yeah.
But for some odd reason, I've tried them all. I haven't tried the latest one, but I tried the other ones. And I put like 3 or 4 hours into each of them. And you know what it's like with some games. It just doesn't click with you.
Mm-hmm.
You almost can't put, you know, you can't put some games, you know, I bring up fucking Skyrim again. I could give you a long list of the reasons I don't like that game. Whereas something like Deus Ex, it's less tangible. I'm just like, there's just something not quite clicking with me. Despite the fact that all the individual elements work perfectly.
Yeah.
It's like, it doesn't quite come together for me as a cohesive whole. But yeah, like Bethesda, like, you know, I assume at E3, are they doing their usual Bethesda Day thing where they have basically the stage to themselves for a while?
Well, this would be the third year. If they do it this year, that would be the third year in a row.
Yeah, because I know they're mixing it up a bit. Like EA are moving to like a different day, and I think Microsoft have moved their conference, which is quite wise, because before it was like Microsoft comes out, they get a bit of buzz, and then Sony come out in the evening and just steal all their buzz.
Yeah.
So they get like 3 hours worth of buzz. So I think maybe Xbox are a day earlier now. But yeah, I mean, across the board, with basically Xbox looking to like relaunch the console with Scorpio, I think the Nintendo Switch, I think this has been a relatively soft launch, and I think they're really pushing towards an almost second launch at Christmas.
Yeah,
they're obviously doing this for investors. That's the only reason they can be releasing it at this time of year. So
it's not even the time of year that makes me think that it is the limited launch lineup. That's what makes me worry about this launch.
As I said, I just think they know. I think they want to hold the stuff back. I think, you know, they know they've got something special with Zelda.
Yeah.
And I know people like you and I who have already played it on the Wii or whatever can, you know, or not write off, but you can always say, well, you know, Mario Kart's coming out soon, but I've already got it. For a lot of people, when they get that Switch, that game is going to be a massive, massive seller.
Absolutely. It will be for
Absolute
me.
Absolute beast.
It will be for me.
And again, you can't underestimate, like, if you're... Especially, you know, if you're in school, whatever, the idea that you could just take Mario Kart 8 to school, you plonk it on a table, and you can play it against your friends.
Yeah.
Like, surely that's going to be fucking huge. Because, again, of course you can do these social things with your phones and you can play online. But the fact of the matter is, it's never as fun as local multiplayer. And obviously that's something Nintendo are banking on. And I guarantee if I was, like, pretty much anywhere, if I plonked a screen down, gave someone a little controller and said, oh, do you want to play Mario Kart? They want to play fucking Mario Kart.
Yeah.
So I really do think that could be a massive, massive game for them, despite the fact that it's basically already been released on the Wii U. but yeah, I think EU's going to be absolutely massive this year. Absolutely massive. But, excuse me. one thing I'm not so sure about, and we will get to movies in a minute.
Okay.
But did you hear about Ubisoft making an Avatar game?
Yeah, I did, actually. I have a friend who is working on that.
Really?
Yeah. In the narrative design department,
Awesome.
I found out about it because she shared the video just saying this is what we've been working on.
Oh, Oh, okay. It does sound like it could be a kind of... I mean, they're using the Division engine, aren't they? The Snowdrop engine?
The Snowdrop engine. So,
It suggests maybe, and the way they were talking in the video, like it might be an open world or, you know, an open Pandora.
Yeah, thing. But they've made a big deal about the world. And I think if you have the Snowdrop engine, you kind of have to be leveraging that against what people are going to expect from an Avatar game.
But I think they've got to lean into the world because people, obviously, it's easy to criticize Avatar and like, oh, everyone's like, oh, you know, nobody has any interest in Avatar anymore. You know, this is very much from like a hardcore, dare I say, a geek's perspective. People forget that Avatar is, you know, it's the highest grossing film of all time. And one of the great things that Avatar did, because, again, before the original film came out, everyone was like, oh, blue cats? It's like, what the fuck? But never bet against James Cameron for a start.
Yeah, that's
true. The thing that Avatar did so brilliantly was that it appealed to every demographic. The first trailer that came out for Avatar was basically a romance.
Yeah.
It, like, totally leans into romance. And of course, all the geeks went bonkers on IGN or whatever.
It just shows you, Zoe Saldana is beautiful, even if she is a blue cat woman.
She makes a very beautiful blue cat. But because they know they're not just going for the kind of traditional sci-fi market, with a film like that, they were going for everyone. That's the only way you make $2.5 billion is you appeal to fucking everyone.
Yeah.
And while, you know, it's not the most fondly remembered movie in the world, the one thing that is remembered, does anyone really remember much about Sully? Maybe not. Does anyone really remember, like, Sigourney Weaver's character name? No. The one thing everybody remembers, though, is the world. Everyone remembers Pandora.
Yeah.
So I think it's a wise move with the game to lean into that, because
it was also, you know, a lot of people's first 3D experience at the cinema.
Yeah, yeah. And obviously that was a big thing at the time. But I always find it interesting. It's people keep making the same mistake. It happened, you know, obviously with Titanic.
Yeah.
Where everyone was like, oh, this film's going to flop. It was the biggest film of all time. Avatar was coming out. Everyone's like, this is going to flop. No, it's not only is it not a flop, it's now the biggest movie of all time. It's like, really? Are you all going to sit there and say that this is going to flop?
Do you think that James Cameron is buying thousands of tickets and there's just empty cinemas on a Wednesday afternoon that are always sold out?
It's just him. Just him sitting there.
Him in his like submarine bubble thing.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
He takes it everywhere he goes. With that South Park music playing.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Well, it must be. I mean, how else can you account for the billions of tickets sold? But I know, like, surely, because obviously they've made a huge commitment. I think they're making, what, 4 films? This is James Cameron. There's no way he's just going to release 4 pretty looking films.
No.
There's going to be something special. There's going to be something you haven't seen before.
I
guarantee
so.
There will be a hook. You know, not only will it be, oh, there's, you know, people talking because there's a new Avatar film coming out. There'll be talk because there'll be something about it.
I don't know if I ever told you, but Avatar is the only film I have ever fallen asleep to at the cinema.
Really?
Yeah.
So you weren't a fan then?
I was ill.
Basically,
my youngest brother had come to Edinburgh to visit me, and I felt so bad that basically I had lain in bed and been like, there's my Xbox, just play whatever you want to play.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
I was like, right, okay, let's go to the cinema.
And
I fell asleep because I was on painkillers and really not feeling well.
Yeah, well, that's fair enough. And I think, don't get me wrong, I don't think that's a brilliant film, but I do think that Avatar gets a bad rap. It's a perfectly good film.
Mm-hmm.
And people, again, I think, do forget the fact that that first experience of seeing Avatar was something special.
Yeah.
I hadn't seen the 3D film before. I went to see that, and maybe it's rose-tinted glasses, but I don't think I've seen a better example of 3D since. I really don't.
You'd think that you'd think that rose-tinted 3D glasses would spoil your movie.
What's that?
Nothing, I'm being an arse.
Oh, okay, sorry, you were asked the wrong possible time. I had an itchy ear, so I took out my earphone for just a second. Sorry, 1 second. God damn it. I've never done that before. I just had the itchiest fucking ear.
Just imagine like a dog and a cat just pawing at the side of its head.
Yeah, or maybe it was just one of those things I sensed. I was like, you know what? I think Ross is going to say something mean to me. I'm going to take out my fucking earphone. Fuck this man. I'm going to listen to that asshole. But you know what? You did fall asleep in that, but I very much assume you didn't fall asleep in Logan, which you went to see this week.
No, I went to see it last night. It was... the first time I've seen a film on opening night since
Avatar.
No, I don't think I even got to see Force Awakens on opening night. Really? I don't think. It's been a long time.
And what counts as opening night now? Is it the night before where they show it at midnight? I saw Force Awakens on the I see a lot of films on the opening weekend, should we say.
Yeah.
But it's like, I don't rush out if, like, because this was released on, what, Wednesday?
Yeah, yeah, it was released Wednesday.
It's a weird night.
It is a bit weird. But yeah, the movie itself is incredible.
Incredible.
It is everything, all the positive stuff that people have been saying is true.
Awesome.
It is a plot-driven, character-driven road trip movie that just happens to be about a man who can make claws come out of his hands.
I'm so embarrassed.
And the world's most powerful psychic. It's the setting is interesting.
Mm-hmm,
I can't give anything away because they don't.
Yeah, please don't. I'm seeing on Saturday.
Because
morning.
They don't give anything away. Something has happened.
Yeah,
it's never.
You said you sounded like Trailer Man. Something has happened
in a world.
That's all I can tell you. In a world where something has happened, a man with claws travels the world.
My only real gripe with it, it does lack. It lacks.
Don't say it lacks a giant silver samurai.
No. Well, it does, or does it? But it does lack a strong villain character. That would be my issue. He is pretty cool. I won't go any further into it. It's more.
It's more, well, the thing is,
Logan is dealing with some existential issues.
I love the fact that, you know, you don't want to can't commit to spoilers, so you have to talk in riddle. So there's a cat, and oh no, I can't do this. Imagine a cloud, if you will. It's always tricky when you're talking about these films without going into spoilers. But I'm just
especially
happy.
Because this one isn't just about. Like massive cutscenes, although there is plenty of action, and this film deserves its R rating.
It's a 15 over here, isn't it?
It is a 15. I thought.
Yeah. I thought it was 18. That's.
I think it is in the States.
Yeah.
But it is.
Yeah,
it has violence that I would describe as gratuitous.
Oh, cool.
There were a couple of moments where I actually went, "Oof!" Like seeing it happen, like.
Mm-hmm.
They do not hold back. They don't really cut away either.
I do like violence when it has impact. I mean, if you do it all film, then
there's plenty of impact.
You become numb to it. But I think the most effective examples of violence are those ones where they almost come out of the blue. Like a great example is Richard Winding Refn's films, stuff like Driver, where you know most of the film it's you don't see blood everywhere, but then when you see the blood, it's fucking unbelievable. And it really kind of takes you back.
Yeah.
But no, I'm just glad it's good because I was not looking forward to this, and then the trailer just came out of nowhere, and I was like, holy shit, that is one of the best trailers I've seen in years. But then I remember one of the best trailers I'd seen for the past few years had been Prometheus, and we all know how that turned out. A good trailer does not a good film make. That's a sentence.
No, but it's the best thing I could say about it is that it remains true to the characters, both in terms of what you've seen at the cinema and even what you've seen in the comic books, although it actually references the comic books in a...
In a meta narrative. Where he's like looking at the comics and he's like, a quarter of it's true,
it didn't happen like this.
That's pretty cool, though.
It is very cool.
That's pretty cool.
But yeah, it's definitely it's the send off that both of these actors deserve.
Yeah.
Because they get their time.
It's good, a good sign for the Fox universe of Marvel films as well, because. They've almost been like, well, we can't compete necessarily maybe with marvel at their own game. And, you know, maybe they found that out the hard way with the last X-Men film, which we've spoke about in great length about how rubbish it is. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the films which have really hit big for them have been, I assume, you know, Logan's going to be a massive hit.
I hope so.
And that's an R-rated movie. And the other big, huge hit was Deadpool. Another R-rated movie. Mm-hmm. So, you know, maybe they're looking at their catalogue and saying, well, we can do something different. We can be the, make the more adult-oriented films, which Marvel can't make, you know?
Just the Fantastic Four with a hardcore sex scene in the middle.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the thing is, Fantastic Four was a failure. There's no choice about it. It was a poor film. But even that, I thought, was an ambitious failure. It was one of those interesting films which didn't quite work, but if they'd had maybe a bit more faith at the time, because obviously the talk was that there was a lot of input, should we say, from third parties rather than from the director.
Yeah.
You know, maybe they've learned from that experience and, you know, they've said, okay, let's put our faith in the directors. And that's why when you end up with films like Deadpool and films like Logan, where they're like, all right, fuck it, we're not going to attempt to have a big silver samurai. We're not going to attempt to have a big, huge action scene like at the end of Apocalypse, which everyone fucking hated. We're just going to let the director make the film he wants to make. And obviously it's paying dividends. And, you know, there's only so many Marvel films you can make in the same mold before people want something different.
Yep, and, exactly.
You know, films like, again, I'm going on the assumption that Logan's going to be a big hit, but I really think it's going to be a big hit. And, you know, maybe it's kind of leaning towards an idea that, you know, people are ready for something different, something a bit darker. You know, something to go with these somewhat darker times, shall we say.
Well, there is a very strong modern kind of allegory that runs through the film as well.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure you'll spot it.
Ah, well, I hope so.
And yeah, the last thing I'll say, it's the first time I've seen Stephen Merchant as an actor.
Yeah, and I noticed he's one of the...
And he nails it.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, awesome.
I was surprised. I thought he'd be a bit character, there for a bit of comic relief. No, very, very earnest, very, very strong performance.
Oh, awesome. No, I'm totally looking forward to it. I haven't watched anything as interesting. I watched a about as bizarre a triple bill of movies I think anyone's ever watched last weekend.
Okay.
I watched Lessons of Evil. It's a Takashi Miike film, which, for anyone who knows Takashi Miike films, you know what you're getting into there. I almost don't want to say anything because I went into that film not knowing anything and it was all the more enjoyable for it. But it's based on a manga and it becomes incredibly violent and it's so fucking weird. Basically, it's like a school teacher who's actually an absolute, like, he's really charming and everyone loves him, but behind, you know, the good looks, he's actually an absolute lunatic and ends up killing loads of people.
Okay.
It sounds quite dark and obviously...
Certainly sounds like manga.
Yeah, a lot of school kids get killed, but it does it in a very Takeshi Miike kind of way, if that makes any sense to you.
Right.
I would suggest giving that a look. I watched Swiss Army Man, the one with...
Oh, is it good? I really want to see it.
It's awesome. It's so strange, though, because obviously it is a film about a farting corpse and a corpse who, you know... what's his name? Paul Dano,
yeah.
Uses his boner as a compass. But about halfway through the film, it starts turning into a gay romance between a man and a corpse.
Alright, okay.
It's bizarre, and it totally fucking works.
Well, Daniel Radcliffe is very charming.
Oh, dude, he's so fucking... He's never been more charming. Maybe he's other than in interviews when he comes across as the nicest guy in the fucking world.
I'm guessing Paul Dano eventually starts hallucinating or something.
Well, I don't want to explain anything, you know, because I want people to go watch it. Again, I don't want to spoil anything.
Where did you see it?
I had to go online, sadly, and watch it in a naughty way. And I very rarely, if ever, do that. But it doesn't seem to be anywhere. So I'm like, fuck it, I want to see it. And I had a few hours to spare, so I was just like, that's it, I'm going to see if I can find it online. And I did, so I watched it there. You know, these things happen occasionally. It was the only other film I can remember doing that with was the original John Wick, because it'd been out for ages in America, and it was like, are they ever going to release this in the UK? So I just watched it. I'm going to do the same with Snowpiercer, because that's never been fucking released either. What the fuck?
That might be on my list as well.
Yeah, but Swiss Army Man is awesome. In despite the fact it's about a farting corpse with a boner, it has all the heart in the world. It's such a charming film. It's quite strange, as you'd imagine, but mm-hmm. totally worth watching. The last of the trilogy, and we'll wrap this up now, because we've been banging on for ages, is A Cure for Wellness, the Gore Verbinski film.
Right, okay.
That film, like many of his other films, is... I put that down as a... I don't want to say a failure. It's ambitious, incredibly ambitious, gorgeous mm-hmm. to look at, but it's just too messy. There's too much. And it's almost like nobody has the guts to tell him to rein things in. The same thing happened with, obviously, the Pirates of the Caribbean sequels.
Yeah.
Good films, looked amazing, but they were messy. The Lone Ranger, which got slaughtered, is actually a really... interesting film. That film is right. weird. I'm not sure if you've ever seen it.
I haven't, no, because to be honest, now that I don't really like Johnny Depp, I can't see myself getting over that.
He's great in that film, and even the way that film is framed is fucking bizarre. That film is bonkers, and there are hints of a great film there, but it never quite gets going until the last like 20 minutes. The last 20 minutes essentially become a Lone Ranger film, and it promises, you know, all these promises towards a sequel, which inevitably won't come because it was a huge flop.
Yeah.
But that film still looked gorgeous and had great things in it, despite the fact that it was a mess. This film has gorgeous imagery, but it's about four films in one. It's like a gothic horror, it's a monster movie, it's just too many things. And it's right. just, it's like 2.5 hours long. It needed to be 90 minutes. It needed somebody to come out and say, listen, let's just chop out all this shit. It's got a relatively paper-thin plot. The plot's fine, but it's like a 90-minute plot, again, stretched out to 2.5 hours.
Right.
It just needed to be trimmed at the edges. There's a good film in there, much like, you know, Batman versus Superman, but there's just too much mess. There's too much noise. But gotcha. But a very weird selection of films. And the weirdest thing was... there's a relatively famous scene in A Cure for Wellness where he gets strapped into a dentist chair, and without any anaesthetic, they drill into the front of his tooth, and you see it.
Right.
It doesn't cut away. The next day, I went to the dentist and had someone drill directly into the center of my tooth. It was quite bizarre.
Wow.
It was like a nightmare come to life, because I was having a root canal, and I just... I didn't even realise. So I had that in mind, and I made a joke before I went. I was like, oh, about, you know, going to the dentist. And I didn't even think about the fact. I was like, oh, that's exactly what they're doing. They're drilling directly into the centre of my front tooth. Same tooth and everything.
Jeez. Well, I hope that if you're flying anytime soon,
mm-hmm.
you don't crash and find yourself being used as a Swiss Army man.
Hello? Okay, well, I mean, I said I was going to come to the end of this podcast, and Ross seems to have disappeared. Are you back?
I'm here. I've been here all this time.
Oh, well, it just cut off the sound.
Oh, right.
So that's going to be really weird. When you splice it together, you might get both sides of the recording, or you might just get me. I don't know. But that's probably a good, you know, what was it? They were saying about a plane crash. I don't want to talk about plane crashes. I'm going on holiday next week, for fuck's sake. Yeah, so we'll try and come back next week, but it depends if we can record, because I'm going to Norway on Thursday. We'll see what happens. We'll try and sort something out. But as always, if you've made it to the end of this rambling mess, congratulations.
Yes.
Thank you very much. As always, check out the website, which hopefully I can say at this point, brassgames.co.uk. See, I only need it, like, you know, 45 minutes practice.
And yeah, just get warmed
so
up.
So fucking eloquent by this point. Just get through the first 15 minutes of nonsense, and it's all good.
That's what you'll have on your tombstone. Liam Pritchard, so fucking eloquent.
So fucking eloquent. I love that. Yeah, I'm going with that. I might just kill myself just so I can make sure it happens soon. Maybe on that plane crash I plan on having next week. Yeah, so check us out on Facebook and on the website, and please, iTunes, Android, all that jazz, download it, subscribe, leave a remark. That's not it, is it? What do you leave?
a comment.
There we go. A remark.
Remark just sounds like a negative comment.
It does, doesn't it? Well, don't leave a remark. Be nice. Leave a nice comment. All right, well, thank you very much, and we'll be back at some point in the near future. Bye.
Yes, indeed. Bye.
Bye.